Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host, Quinn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, Janet Keller. You've just published a new book, Janet, The Bathwater Conspiracy, and it's quite a change from your Thaddeus series. Tell us about the book and what inspired you to write about the future rather than the past.
It is so different from the Thaddeus Lewis mysteries. I think people are stunned. But you get a story in your head and you want to do something with it, you know. I'd been toying for a while with writing a book that had women characters that just interacted normally. And by that, I mean, I didn't want it to be about relationships. I didn't want them to be reflected in that sort of mirror of what men think of you that just is so prevalent and gets in the way so often. And I was just kind of, you know, toying with that. And then I started to be really struck by the amount of violence that we put up with in our society, and in particular two cases really kind of hit home because they were so close to home. And the first one was the Shafia Canal murder in Kingston, where the guy offed three of his daughters and his first wife and dumped their bodies in the canal.
Right? Yes.
And the second one, of course, was the Russell Williams case, where the commander of Trenton Air Force Base. So that's like 40 clicks east of me and 40 clicks west of me. And so I really started to pay attention. And so often what happens is, you know, these horrific crimes are committed and we all kind of tut-tut about them and then go about our business and the details are forgotten until the next time. And I started wondering what would happen if a society that wasn't used to that kind of very brutal crime was suddenly confronted by it. How would they react? So those two concepts kind of meshed. And the Bathwater Conspiracy was born, and it's set in the future. My publisher is describing it as dystopic.
Well, I was going to ask you about that.
It isn't really, and it's not really utopia either. So it is post-apocalyptic in a sense, but it's not one of these deals where you've got these highly armed bandits roaming around the countryside all shooting at each other over resources. And it's really our own society, just kind of slightly out of focus and with one big difference.
Can you tell us how the detectives fit into the scheme of things in this society?
What happens is a girl is very brutally gang-raped and murdered, and the body shows up for the autopsy. And the hero of the story is a career cop detective by the name of Carson McHenry. And she is asked to go off and attend the autopsy just as the city police sort of representative at it. And she's told to sign off on the autopsy and don't ask any questions. Because it's such a brutal murder, and this is the kind of crime that just is not ever seen in this society, and because it's being hushed up, she starts digging. Mm-hmm. And the trail takes her off from there.
Okay. And she has a partner.
She has a partner that is assigned to her that she's not too happy about because she's Carson McHenry is kind of a lone maverick and she would prefer to work alone, and this sort of newbie junior detective is assigned, and she spends a great deal of time sending her off on wild goose chases so she can do what she wants.
And after the success of the first Women Killing It festival, mm-hmm. You're all set to hold another one.
We are. What mad women we are.
Yes, indeed.
You know, the first one was just such a wingnut enterprise. It was just, let's do this. And because I had such a background in small concert production, you know, both for myself and for other people, I sort of took a look at what it was going to take to put this together and said, let's just do it. There's nothing here really that scares me. Let's just do it. I think I can make it pay. Because we went into that, no grants, no major sponsors, no nothing, right? And it was so successful, we couldn't believe it. Everybody had a riot. The authors had a riot. The attendees had a riot. We broke even.
Yes.
Which was astounding. And so we see no reason whatsoever not to go ahead and do it again. And the exciting news, the really exciting news, is that we were able to book Gail Bowen,
mm-hmm.
who is one of Canada's premier mystery writers. She's just released like the 18th book in the Joanne Kilbourne series,
right,
which has gone off to be, you know, parts of it have been a movie and a TV series. And So if I could just run through who all got. We've got Gail. We've got R.M. Greenaway, who writes BC Blues. I think she's about to release her third book. And those are kind of police procedural, fairly gritty novels. There's Kim Moritsuku, whose latest book is this glitzy kind of Hollywood mystery. We have Y.S. Lee, who writes young adult but has a lot of readers, a lot of adult readers.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Carol Soles, who has just released a historical mystery. Linda Wicken, who writes basic cozy. Catherine Astolfo, who does have a series, but she also is an award-winning short story writer. So we've been able to get this really wide variety.
Mm-hmm.
Of writers and a whole lot of different kinds of mystery and crime writers, because I think one of the things that everybody really liked in the first one was the fact that there were so many different kinds of writers, and they were talking about writing and not just about their own books, but they were also talking about writing.
I agree. It was a splendid occasion.
It's great fun. It's just great fun.
What dates are those?
That's August 31st to September 2nd, and we do have change of venues. Friday and Saturday night events are going to be held at Picton Town Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's accessible. It's a beautiful hall. The Tea, which last year was at Macaulay House and proved to be far too small. Hooray, what a great problem. We're going to have at St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church, and we're hoping to get Rose House Museum volunteers to do the actual food for us. Everything is going to be in within walking distance, and we'll have maps and stuff for people who are coming from out of town.
Okay, well, how about reading to us from The Bathwater Conspiracy without giving away the final?
Okay. So,
surprise.
Outside of the city, there's a very reduced population, and what is happening is that this current society is recycling a lot of stuff. So a lot of the outskirts of the city, the suburbs and the industrial parts have, you know, they're falling to ruin because they're not being used that much anymore. And things are slowly being dug up and carried away and reused for other projects. But out in this, what they call the decayed area, or the DK, as they call it, there are little bands of people still living out there who aren't interested in, you know, becoming part of the city society, including some religious fundamentalists who just are not interested in any kind of modern technology. And this is who our hero, Carson McHenry, runs across. She goes out into the DK in search of some answers to this crime. The passage widened abruptly and spilled out into a clearing. Quite a large clearing. It had once been a parking lot, maybe? If so, the asphalt had been grubbed up and carried away, exposing the rich soil underneath it. Now tidy furrows marked the surface where once there had been lane markers. Fruit trees grew in the place of light posts. The clearing was ringed by a ragged skyline of ruined buildings, almost entirely enclosed by them. Some of the debris a couple of stories high, others three or four, punctuated at intervals by pillars like the one I had passed. The gardens would be well protected from the wind, and the mass of the surrounding ruins would radiate the heat they soaked up from the sun. It was a well-chosen site for a permanent encampment. Across from where I stood were giant slabs of intact concrete that had fallen crazily against each other, forming a warren of caves and cubbyholes, their entrances draped in old canvas. There was not a soul in sight, although I could smell a fire smoldering, and there were bits and pieces of faded clothing hanging from a makeshift line. I could feel the eyes that were hiding in the ruined buildings, watching. It wasn't an animal that had sent gravel skittering, but one of the ragtag citizens of the DK. It remained to be seen which variety I'd stumbled across. Hello? Is anybody here? No answer, but I heard more scrabbling off to my right. Hello? I just want to talk to you. I mean no harm. Silence. I leaned my bike against the tunnel wall and walked out to the center of the clearing. I waited. Let them know I wasn't going anywhere until they'd crawled out of their hidey holes. Throw down your weapon. The voice that floated out from behind a flapping piece of canvas was deep and spoke with authority. An old woman, I guessed. Probably the leader of whatever scruffy little group this was. No. Then go away. No, I just want to talk to you. I took another step forward, my body tense to make a grab for my gun. Why should I consort with the agents of Satan? The voice asked. Just my luck, Sakers. Because I know where to find you now, I shouted back. I can always come back with reinforcements, you know. The canvas was pushed aside and the woman stepped out. Her appearance matched her voice. Sometimes it's difficult to tell the age of these women who live so rough, but if I had to guess, I'd have put this one at somewhere just over 102. Her hair was a straggly gray mass of braids that hung lengthy down the sides of her weathered face, and she walked with a peculiar gait that incorporated both a limp and a shuffle. She stumbled to the center of the clearing. Forsake the ways of Satan, for the Lord will judge, and he will find you wanting. I had to choose my next words carefully. You never know what will set the Sakers off. The Lord isn't judging today. I am. The woman shook her head and hobbled over until she was standing no more than a foot away from me. You are not a Dharm. I've never been happy with people getting too far into my space, but stepping back right then would have been a show of weakness, so I held my ground. No, I'm not a Dharm. I'm city police. And what does the city want with us? We bother no one here. I want to know if there was a girl found near here, not one of your, I hesitated, unsure of what to call this scrofulous collection of humanity, community. A girl from the university. Did you hear about any sort of altercation where somebody got pushed off a building? The old woman shrugged. What do I know about uni girls? It wasn't you who found her then. Nobody found a girl. What about some of the other groups out here? Did you hear anything from them? Another shrug. Nobody found a girl. And with that, she turned and hobbled back to her canvas awning. The DK is hard to navigate and impossible for a cityite like myself to know well, but I found it difficult to believe that the old woman would know nothing about anything that happened near the camp. This was her territory. The group had been watching me approach. They'd seen me coming. They'd had time to hide. It was possible that they had not seen a couple of students or heard an argument. But if this was where Alfreda Longwell had died, the Sakers would most certainly be aware of the commotion that a group of Dharms would make collecting a dead body. The student, Claire, claimed that Alfie hadn't been anywhere near the Oriole camp. Even if I was in the right place and this was the camp she'd been talking about, it was clear that the old woman either didn't know anything about it or wasn't prepared to tell me if she did. It'd been a long shot anyway.
Well, many thanks, Janet.
Thank you so much.
To connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for who we might interview in future programs to us at our website, wordonthehills.com, where all these programs are archived and available to listeners at any time. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week on 89.7 Truly Local Radio.